Welcome back. Episode 309, Parish of the Patriots. It's hard to believe another week has already sailed by. It is Tuesday once again. I'm actually recording this on the weekend, which is the norm. And sometimes I wind up actually recording on the day of, just depending on what all I've got going on. But I'm on a regular recording this on the weekend. And I'm going to tell you, y'all lucky. Y'all lucky like last week's show. I recorded it on the weekend, y'all lucky, because I got this flu that was going around. I got that by Monday evening, and Tuesday I was so sick. There would not have been a Parish of the Patriots show. I love y'all. I want to do these shows, but I would not have been able to do it on Tuesday. Man, I'll tell you what, this is a heck of a flu bug going around, extremely contagious. I was sicker than I've been in years. I got over it about the same amount of time. I always get over something like that, but man, I was sick. It's booger. It's no fun. But I am doing much better now. So thankfully, that's why we're here. I know all of you. I assume all of you return members of the congregation, but there could be someone new. If you are new, we do have a Christian specific segment. It's roughly the halfway point of the show. I encourage you to tune in and give it a shot, give it a listen, especially if you do consider yourself a Christian believer, because that's what it's designed for. It isn't designed to convince somebody who's a non-believer. You might get that out of it, but it's not the intention. It's not the structure of it. I like to think of it as a little more of an advanced thing for believers, you know, but we do have that discussion. It's worth a listen, so I encourage you to do something, or rather to give it a shot, but that's up to you. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We've got the snail mail address. That's what we got. Those Bitcoin, those crypto addresses, those are left over from Sven before he got sent away. Those aren't mine. I don't have access to those. Please don't get confused and be like, GPD, I sent you some crypto, because I'm going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't even do crypto anymore. I don't do that. What are you talking about? Got the snail mail address. Now, before recording today's show, I went and looked and I screwed up last Tuesday's show. I didn't get the address on there. It'll be on there now, because I'm going to go back when I post this show up. I'm going to go back and correct that. But yeah, I did screw that up. So sorry about that. But it will be up here. Hopefully nobody was confused last week and be like, I don't see it on there. You could have go to the previous weeks and it, but anyway, yeah. So yeah, anyway, listener supporter mailbag. I wanted to cue in and play the Lone Ranger song here. But I don't feel like it, because I'm still getting over the flu. But Mr. T, for 2 weeks in a row, you get the Lone Ranger award. And thus wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. I'm not blackpilled. Nobody can accuse me of doing it for the money. I will tell you that. So it's all good. It's all good, brother. God provides it. No matter where it comes from. That's all I'll say. God provides it. It comes from the Lord. Where it comes from is none of my concern. The Lord provides it. We keep on keeping on. Got the flu going around. We got planes falling out of the sky. It's crazy, crazy, crazy times. Now, as I'm recording this on Saturday, earlier in the week, we had this, this helicopter crash into this airliner in Washington, D.C. I'm sure all of you are aware of that story. And then Friday night, the Learjet ambulance thing come crashing down. That's crazy. You watch some of the videos and you can hear the thing screaming, just lawn darting in, and just a massive fireball exposed. That, I don't even know what the story is going to be on that one. I have no idea what the story is going to be on that thing, because the thing had just taken off. And then, then you see it pop up on the videos and that thing is on fire in the air, it looks like. And you can just hear it screaming and just lawn darts in and just, it looked like a missile strike. When I saw some of these videos, I'm like, that's a missile strike. That ain't even no Learjet. They making up a Learjet story. They making up a Learjet story to cover up a missile strike or something. But yeah, I don't. But the of course, like I said, the bigger story was this helicopter crashing in. And I thought we'd get into that a little bit with a broader view. For starters, I would like to say that one thing about this is it reminds, because I'm interested. I find these things interesting. And it was yet another reminder, as if I needed one. I don't, but as if I needed one as a reminder, as I always tell people, you may think you hate the media, but you don't hate them nearly enough. I don't remember who originally said that, but I agree with it. You may think you hate the media, but you don't hate them enough. The media is just, you know, going to the Washington, D.C. crash story now. The media is just milking this thing. Friday morning on the network news, their big leadoff story was they have recovered the black boxes. They've recovered the black boxes, the flight data recorder, cockpit recorder from the American Airlines flight. This is going to give investigators a huge cache of information. This is going to give them a bunch of information, but it's clues as to what could have happened. We're going to have these clues, like they're turning it into a Scooby mystery. They're not going to get any information from those boxes. I mean, they'll have information. Nothing's going to solve the mystery because there is no mystery. They could go pull the black boxes out of a random aircraft that was sitting on the apron out there somewhere. They're going to get the same amount of useful information. But I'm already going to tell you what they're going to get from the black boxes on the American Airlines flight. It's going to say the plane was right where it was supposed to be, flying as functioning as it was supposed to be. The pilots were where they were supposed to be, doing what they were supposed to be doing. You know, the media just trying to milk a story, just keep it going until they got the next thing to talk about. That's it. Act like there's some kind. There's not a mystery here. One aircraft was where it was supposed to be. One was not. You know, which one? Well, the helicopter. There is a 200-foot ceiling. They're not supposed to be higher than that. The helicopter was well over that and met the aircraft. Ding dong. End of story. Now, the rest, you can speculate as to why they were. You know, and that's all you can do is speculate because you're not going to know everybody dead. You know? You're going to know. You can speculate. We'll sit there and act like we have no idea why the crash happened. That's obvious. They have a 200-foot cap. Those helicopters aren't supposed to be above that cap. Apparently, they break it on a regular basis, though, because, you know, America's heroes can do no wrong. And that's something else I found disgusting. Yeah, I look at various videos, people analyzing this and stuff, and there's a lot of really good analyzing out there, way better than what the media is doing. But then once in a while, you'll come across something and someone's trying to kind of make it like, you know, this can't be the fault of America's heroes. You know, like somehow maybe the airliner pilots, and I would not be surprised if at some point they do try to twist it, get it twisted up and try to, you know, somehow make it the airline pilot's fault. They did something wrong because it couldn't possibly be America's heroes. My gosh, they're practicing to fight for freedom by doing ridiculous training missions with night vision goggles in heavily trafficked airspace, and they can't keep their altitude cap with three people on the helicopter. Three people. You know, so a student, an instructor, and a flight crew chief, which I don't know what they do, but you got an instructor there, you know. And nobody notices you've busted the cap. I don't know. I know most people probably don't understand how this stuff works. These things are not suggestions. Of course, see, when you're America's heroes, you figure that maybe, you know, those rules are suggestions for you. If you're flying a little airplane, you know, you got your one of these little airplanes, or you go rent a little airplane, or you're a student pilot, you're learning to fly, and you fly, you learn what Bravo airspace is all about. If you're anywhere near that taking your lessons, you learn about what they call Bravo airspace, is the airspace around busy airports, high trafficked areas. And you're going to learn what those things are. And they have rings out there. And the further away from the center of that ring is the busy airport. And the rings go out, you know, you have your altitudes. You know, you can't, at this outer ring, say, you're in your little airplane. You're fine. You're technically, you're under the Bravo. You know, if you get higher than 2,000 feet, for instance, then you're technically in their Bravo airspace. You can't do that unless you have permission from air traffic control. So you're going to, because you know what you're going to find out? If you're going along and you're a student pilot, maybe you're on your first solo and you skim across the edge of that and you screw up and you get over there, you're going to get a scolding. You're going to get a phone call. They're going to pull that IN number off your airplane, and back at the flight school, they're going to get a call and say, hey, how come one of y'all's planes just violated Bravo airspace? As a student pilot, they're probably going to give you a wrist slap and a talking to. But technically, there could be more severe consequences. Apparently, these helicopter pilots, they've been violating this 200-foot cap on a regular basis. I saw another ATC video where another helicopter deal was violating it left and right, and planes were having to do go-arounds because of America's heroes. I'm not trying to just... I'm not trying to just dog on people in the military. That's not what I mean. But I do hate this America's Heroes routine, as you might have picked up. You know? It's a narrative. It's a narrative that got invented after 9/11. And it's sickening. It's a job. You know, these people volunteer for it. So that means, you know, they essentially applied for a job and got hired to do these jobs. I mean, the government dresses them up in camouflage and has them do whatever, but I mean, it's still just a job. This turning it into America's heroes. And then with that, getting this, you know, sense of, this sense of entitlement, again, don't get me wrong. I'm not just trying to dog, I'm sure there's veterans that listen to this show, and I'm not shitting all over y'all. I'm really not. But you got to admit, I've had military people that were veterans themselves tell me that, back when, several years ago, when people were falling all over themselves thinking of it, thank you for your service. And I did. I've had veterans and stuff tell me that that's they don't even like that, Quit that shit. That's cringe. Thank you for your service, sir. Thank you for being one of America's heroes and protecting my freedom from the Taliban or whatever the hell. It just occurred to me what a niche audience Radio Albion has to be, this show that Radio Albion is. Not only do we criticize communists, leftists, whoever the hell, we also be criticizing America's heroes. This isn't what you do if you want a big audience. We just tell it like it is. Now, the point I was looking to get to, America's heroes. I'm still hung up on that. America. You see, sometimes you'll pull up to a place, like a restaurant or something, and they always got like the 500 empty handicap spots in front. And then they'll have a couple of spots. You're like, there's a spot open. There'll be a sign there. And it'll say, reserved for America's heroes, reserved for our veterans. Some people who are unscrupulous may or may not sometimes take those parking spots, because what are they going to do? Ask, are you one of America's heroes? I want to make sure. Anyway. No, look at this. And they try to twist all this around, like I say. And it's funny watching them try to make all these different angles when this is a very straightforward talking about. Back to the crash. Talking about this crash, the failures involved. Now, the whole thing is crazy. They're running these training operations, and this is very tight airspace. I mean, if the helicopter would have been where they were supposed to be under their altitude cap, it would have been close. It would have been close, but they wouldn't have hit them. I mean, it's crazy that they're operating that close, but that's a subject for a different day. But they wouldn't have hit. And the reality is they've been doing this, obviously, for a while without an incident. But you see, America's heroes got too high. I mean, that's it. They got too high, ran into the side of the plane. And you got people that are trying to make these ridiculous conspiracy theories. Sometimes this stuff is so stupid, you wonder if they're whale poisoners or something, you know? Well, what if everybody on the helicopter had been dead? Maybe they were all killed and the person was doing a terrorism or something. Or maybe America's, maybe the military is just like all of the rest of the government and is not nearly as competent as you think they are, even though I know America's heroes. But another lesson I think, which I wanted to get to, that I think we can learn from this, is once again, you have these signs of a failing society, failing infrastructure. Avoid, somebody going to say, oh, well, you're still a lot safer flying than you are driving your car. And that may be true. Wasn't that day for them people, though, was it? Wasn't that day for them folks? Y'all do you. But I mean, I would avoid things. I recommend avoiding things that require complicated systems to all work together. Because the more complicated the system is, the less room for incompetency there is. And the corruption and all of the rest of it in this country, you've got a lot of incompetency going on. You've got competency crumbling away. Now, in that particular scenario, there was a very complicated situation. You know, if you're just flying into a regular airport in a regular city somewhere, they ain't running some weird helicopter flights with night vision goggles and heavily trafficked airspace. You know, there's less complication there, right? What you have here is very complicated things going on at once that requires a lot of people to be doing what they need to be doing. And all you need is one idiot. Or I should be more generous. All you need is one person with a lapse at the wrong time. And you're going to pay for that with your life. It just is. You say, well, the odds are low. Okay. But I mean, they're not zero. The more complicated a situation is that requires competence, the higher the probability becomes that you could have a bad end. Because again, this is a failing and crumbling society. And as it continues to degrade, here's the thing, as it continues, you look at this situation, this was a pretty complicated operation going on with a lot of moving parts at the same time. But the thing is, as it continues to degrade, you're going to start seeing failures in less complicated areas, in less complicated, with less complicated things going on, just because the level of incompetence is increasing. Thing is, when you think about it, there's a lot of things that look simple that we take for granted that actually, if you really think about it, they're more complicated than they appear. You know, I mean, you drive down the highway, you drive down freeway or highway or whatever, you go over a bridge, you assume the bridge is fine. It's a bridge. You assume the work has been done, but was the person who designed it competent? Did the contractors that, did the work cut any corners to make a little more profit? What about, and these things are really, I don't know how many people are aware of it, but like South Korea is like it's like an example of capitalism on hyper steroids or something. So this is real endemic in South Korea, from what I understand. You know, buildings will collapse because, well, it turns out that, everybody was taking bribes. You know, the company providing the concrete was skimming more money by basically watering the concrete down to where it was below standards, and the inspectors passed it anyway because they got paid off and things such as this. I mean, you go over a bridge and you don't think about all of those things. But as this crumbling society continues to fall apart, these things may become more and more relevant to think about them. I don't know what you do, just stay at home and hide, but I mean, you know, it's just going to be a reality to bear in mind. It's funny too, because you can look at how the whole, what do I want to say, the two sides, you know, of the Trump as a, you know, as a cult leader type of thing, you know, as a figure that we've talked about at length. It's reflected again in discussions about like this crash. You got shit libs out here going, "Welcome to a Trump's America, where planes are falling out of the sky," like Trump is up there blowing up planes or something. You know, it's stupid. This is Trump's fault. It's the evil orange man. It just doesn't make even any sense. It doesn't matter, because they just live in a world detached from reality. And likewise, though, a bunch of the Red Hat crew, you know, they have a hard time admitting, you know, America's heroes might have done something wrong. So, you know, we got to hold off on judgment here. We have to wait for an official. You have people that are all regularly skeptical about anything the government says, and then they're like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, don't be so fast to point the finger at America's heroes. We have to wait for the official government investigation before we come to any conclusion." Look, it's not hard. One was where they were supposed to be and the other was not. We know which one was not, so we know the cause. Don't be so fast to point the finger at America's heroes. I do. I just find the whole thing silly. All of it. All of that America's heroes nonsense. I find silly. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the police were 100%, 100 times more competent than what they are today. I don't have to have a statistic. I don't have to point to a government study or any other horseshit like that. I can tell you because I lived through it. And I'm telling you, 30, 40 years ago, the police were 100 times more competent than they are today. And wasn't nobody running around thanking them for their service and calling them America's heroes. Now, we got they're part of America's heroes too. And I'm sorry, but you see a whole lot of dumbass behavior. Actually, I'm not sorry. I'm sorry that we see that. I'm not sorry for saying it. You see a whole lot of dumbass behavior out of these cops. America's heroes now, 30, 40 years ago, you had odds if you had to interact with the police that they would have a certain, you could count on a certain amount of common sense. You know, yeah, there was always that one asshole cop, but I mean, you figure on some sort of common sense. But they weren't nobody running around calling them America's heroes back then. That would have been just weird if you could go back then and tell people, you know what, we should start referring to the police as our heroes. And everybody would have looked at you and just laughed. You know, we had movies like Smokey and the Bandit where the whole gag was the cops were silly, you know. The Dukes of Hazzard with Roscoe Coltrane and his dog, you know, just, he was goofy, but he was harmless. I mean, he didn't, you know, he wasn't trying to kill the Duke boys or anything. And wasn't nobody running around calling Roscoe America's heroes. If you can go back and tell people back in the 80s, you need to start calling these people your heroes. Everybody just laughed and said you're a weirdo. But now, you know, like I say, now they're way less competent than they were back then, and they get this whole hero treatment. You know, that's how they try to sucker people into taking the job. You get to be one of America's heroes. I don't know, man. It's just like with a disaster of any sort, the message is clear, and I keep telling this. If you run into a situation where you're in a disaster, you're on your own. And you know, really in our day-to-day lives, you're on your own. You know, you're on your own. Back in the day, you drive down the highway, and to a certain extent, you could take a lot of things for granted that the other drivers weren't running around with their head up their ass. So you could make your decisions based on that assumption. And more than likely, you would be okay. Not anymore. If you drive around with the assumption that the other people on the road do not have their head up their ass, you're probably going to get in a bad spot, because they are driving around with their head up their ass. You know it. I know it. Again, in driving, people used to be more competent. They did a big psyop. Mothers against drunk drivers is a psyop. And I'm going to tell you, because I was around. That was a psyop. They invented this group and made this cause, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, which is a revenue-raising effort by the government. They wanted to pass these more stringent laws so that they could collect more money. There was no drunk driving epidemic that was like wiping out all these people. Were people killed in drunk driving car crashes? Absolutely. Well, you fast forward to today. Now we've gone through the Mothers Against Drunk Driving PSYOP, and now we have all of these draconian laws where they can just stop you at a checkpoint with no probable cause to make sure they don't, some cop with an IQ 2 points lower than, you know, 2 base points lower than yours can sit there and go, I think I smell alcohol in your car. And you're like, what are you talking about? I got an air freshener hanging in here. Maybe that's what you smell. I'm like, no, you're going to have to pull over here and you're going to have to submit to a breath. Well, you don't have any probable cause. You're pulling that out of your eye. You're the law, buddy. And I'm America's heroes. You see, they got all of that passed. Now they can stop you at a checkpoint. Back then, they couldn't do that. They had to get behind you and try to claim that you weaved or something if they wanted to pull you over for drunk driving. Now they just set up checkpoints. See, it makes it easier for them to collect more revenue. And plus, they got everybody used to the idea that now there'll be checkpoints and you have to stop at the checkpoints and do whatever the officer says. Isn't that sickening? You get these badge lickers and they'd be like, you know, well, maybe if you just do everything the officer says, whether it's legal or not. Okay, if the officer says, you know, pick up that knife and stab the person in the car next to you. Yes, sir, officer, sir. No sense. It's a psyop. You know, did people die in drunk driving accidents back then? Yeah, they did. Are people dying in ridiculous accidents today? Yeah, they sure are. One of the ways I like to point out the ludicrousy of it is if you're driving perfectly fine and you got a license plate light out, so some cop pulls you over, claims he smells alcohol on your breath and drags you in and says, oh yeah, you had 2 beers, even though you're driving fine and you're okay, you're going to jail, buddy, and you know, we're gonna screw up your life. May lose your job. You're gonna have a hard time getting cars. Your boy, we may suspend your license. Throw the book at you. You were driving fine. You had a tag light out. That's it. And yet, how many days do you drive down the road and you're behind some asshole who can't maintain the lane? They're all over on the shoulder, over in the oncoming lane. Nearly rear end stopped traffic ahead of them. Then when you finally get around them and look, and there's somebody staring at their damn phone. If the cop pulls, if they cause an accident, or if the cop pulls them over, it's maybe a ticket. Maybe. If they cause it, they crash into somebody sitting at the stop sign because they're staring at their phone. They just, there's a ticket for you. How does that make any sense? Don't make no sense. And it's funny, when you're used to dealing with disingenuous people, you know, you could imagine what they would be saying if you were telling this, you know, and there was a disingenuous person that would speak out. Oh, so you're saying that people should just go around drunk driving. Oh, I see how you are. Piss off. I don't even, you know, don't even bother with people like that. It's a waste of time. Been there, done that. They're not being genuine when they come out with crap like that. Obviously, nobody's saying you should be going around drunk driving. That's to completely miss the point. Now they can set up checkpoints. Does anybody think that's good? When did they get the right to do that? Well, that started as a part of the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers PSYOP. Now everybody's conditioned to it. Nobody thinks twice. If you're driving along, there's a checkpoint up ahead. And the only time you would see that before is if, like, there was a fugitive that had committed a murder and they're trying to, you know, they're stopping every car because they're looking for this guy. And you know, nobody was mad back then because they understood, yeah, the cops are looking for this psycho killer. I'm not going to be offended that they're going to stop and look in my car. Hell, if the guy was in the back seat with a knife to my throat, I'm hoping a cop might notice. But now it's just like everybody's conditioned. Oh, they doing a DWI checkpoint. I hope the cop doesn't think this breath mint I got smells like vodka or some peppermint schnapps. He might think my breath mint is peppermint schnapps. And I might have to go to the hospital and get my blood drawn because he ain't going to accept it if the breathalyzer says he's wrong because he can't be wrong because he's America's heroes. Competency. Everywhere. I'm telling you, if you can, avoid situations that require things to work, that require competent people, several competent people to be doing what they need to be doing at the same time. Because the more moving parts there are, the bigger the chances things could go sideways. That's just the reality of living in a failing society. And it ain't going to change. You know, I mean, we might see a few things get adjusted, so you might see a little relief here and there, and take it when you get it. Don't sit there and just try to find a dark cloud lining. If something good happens, be glad about it. I'm just telling you, you're on your own. Every day of your life, you're on your own. Don't count on the system for anything. Except incompetency, because you won't be disappointed. Take care of yourself. Look out for yourself. Make a decision. You know? Make a decision. Yeah, I could do this or this, but what kind of situation does that put me in? You know, am I going to be safer if I do this other thing? You know. Anyway, yeah, we got to keep rolling because we're not having a competency crisis. Hopefully, we're not having a competency. We're not having a competency crisis here at Radio Alvin. We're not having a competency crisis here at the Parish of the Patriots. What we are having is a Christian specific segment. And we're headed right to it, so you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. During my many things I read sometimes across the internet, I was reading recently, the other day, I was reading a piece by a Christian believer, and along a very familiar vein, they were talking about, you know, they have a hard time with the Old Testament. They like to focus upon the New Testament. And the Old Testament's pretty hard. And they made the statement something along the lines of, it seems like a different God in the Old Testament. And I remember you'd hear sometimes when I was a kid, you'd go to church and stuff, and you would hear women would say things like, God was meaner back then. You know, like it was a different God. And this person said the same thing. He says, it's like a different God in the Old Testament. He says, I struggle with that Old Testament stuff. But he says, I really like the New Testament. Now, I always recommend for new believers, if you're new to the faith, yes, you should concentrate on the New Testament, but as you mature, you need to be expanding at some point into the old. If I handed you a book, a giant novella, you know, novel, just a epic novel, and told you to read, you know, say the last six chapters and tell me what you think, and you read the last six chapters, and you'd be like, man, that was awesome. You know, wouldn't your next thing would be like, I can't wait to read all of the rest of the book. You had me read a third or less of it. I want to read the whole story now. And it's that way with the Bible. You know, it's again, I tell new believers, you should focus on the New Testament. That's where you need to get grounded and to get started out from. Which may, I don't know, in a way seem counterintuitive. You know, you would start a story at the beginning. But for your faith purposes, I do believe it serves a new believer well to stay in the New Testament at first, minus the book of Revelation, because you're not going to get anything out of that. But stay in the New Testament, But again, as you mature, you should be ready to start expanding. I cannot imagine being a longtime believer, somebody who's been a believer for years, and you still just don't want to have anything to do with the Old Testament because you just don't get it. God seems meaner. Now, one of the examples of this that the author of the piece I was reading gave, and it's and this brought me to mind, jot it down and talk about it today, because they used a very familiar thing that I see people who have a hard time with the Old Testament or with understanding these things. You know, an example, and he gave the example of Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, to murder his own son. How could God have command somebody to do that? Why would God do that? You know, I can understand all this stuff in the New Testament about, you know, being patient and loving and all, you know, turn the other cheek and the meek shall inherit the earth. And all, I have no problem with that. But that whole thing where God tells Abraham to go murder his only son, I have a hard time with that. And that's a common example people point to and say, man, that Old Testament, man, So I thought we'd talk about that. I figured when thinking about discussing this, you know, was what's the best way to go about it. I couldn't think of a better way to go about it than to just go, because it's not a super long story here. We'll just go ahead and read this account of what happened. We're going to find that in the book of Genesis, chapter 22. We're just going to do verses 1 through 13. That'll get us through the point. Now, I'm assuming you all at this point know the background of how long Abraham suffered waiting to have a son. And that feeds into it too. Obviously, we can't read all of that because we're already at 22 in the book of Genesis at this point. So, but Abraham waited a long time to get his one son. He had to wait till he was an old man, and it came from his wife, who was an old lady. It was a miracle birth because his wife had a barren womb. She was unable to bear children. But God had told him at some point that, you know, she's going to bear you a son. Okay. But then she got older and older. Now she's an old lady. And it's like, okay, yeah, God's going to bear a son through this woman. Long story short, obviously, eventually she did. So he has this miracle son. And now he has this son that he waited so long for. And obviously he's overjoyed and proud of this son. Now we'll pick it up in the book of Genesis. Like I say, it's going to be chapter 22. Spit it out here in a minute. Verses 1 through 13. And as we go through this, I'm going to try to stop and point out the obvious prophetic nature of this and the symbolism of it, because I mean, it's tempting to blow past it because it's so obvious, but again, I guess a lot of people just can't get over and can't see it. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. And he said, take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up, and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, let me say that again, then on the third day, think about the significance of the third day. Jesus rose when? On the third day. You see the symbolism, the prophetic nature of what is transpiring here is to me obvious. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. Took the wood, the burnt offering that Isaac was to be sacrificed on, and laid it on Isaac. Isaac had to carry the wood of his, he had to carry the medium of his own sacrifice on his back. Does that sound familiar? They made Christ bear this cross. They laid the cross upon him to take to his own execution. He laid upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father, and he said, Here I am, my son. Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? There's the fire and the wood. Where's the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. God will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering. If the prophetic symbolism here isn't slapping you back and forth across the face by now, I don't. And they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. The angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. Now, having actually reading through this, again, the prophetic nature of this is just, I mean, it's real obvious. You don't have to be a genius to see what is being prophesied here, the symbolism of it. I think one of the reasons this story, though, bothers people, this is interesting to me, and kind of gets also to the heart of what I wanted to get into as a part of this today. I think one of the reasons this story bothers people so much is because we personalize it. You can put yourself somehow in Abraham's shoes, and you say, how could God command him to do that? How could Abraham do that? We waited a long time for his son, and obviously, he cared very much for his son, and God tells him to go kill him as a sacrifice. And the idea of him having to make this journey and going up, after 3 days going up. I remember reading one time somebody pointed out, in a way he received Isaac back from the dead in 3 days, and that's a way to look at it. But I think one of the reasons this story bothers us is we personalize it and we can attach ourselves, we can put ourselves in Abraham's shoes. How hard this must have been. It's not like, you read this and it sounds like Abraham is a cool cat through the whole thing. There ain't no way. He's human. There ain't no way he was all cool with the idea. There is no way, he gets asked by his son, where's the lamb we're going to sacrifice? The man is no doubt in a really tough place inside, to say the least. God's going to provide a lamb. we personalize this. We look at Abraham and we personalize this. And it's like, how could God ask somebody to do that? My gosh, poor Abraham. What a terrible thing. What a heartrending, heartbreaking thing. Maybe God's just being mean. But maybe we should take that personalizing of the Abraham story. There's nothing wrong with looking at that and from a personalized manner, what would that have been like and what a heartbreaking thing. And instead of saying, man, how cruel of God to make Abraham go through that, instead, maybe we should take a minute and say, wow, God himself went through that. How about taking that emotional personalizing that we do when we read this story of Abraham making the journey with his long-awaited for son to sacrifice him, to make him carry the wood on his back? Maybe we should take some of that emotional personalization that we attach to Abraham here and maybe think about that from God's perspective. God himself made that journey. God himself sacrificed his son. And there wasn't a last minute reprieve. He was indeed 3 days later raised from the dead. But he had to go through with it. I get tired. I really think one of the things we make a mistake as believers, the church in general, is trivializing the price that was paid for us. Oh, yeah, we give it lip service. You know, the church, we give it lip service. You'll hear lip service about, but people be like, I'm so glad Jesus went to the cross for me. How about personalizing that from God's point of view? I mean, God made that journey and sacrificed his son. It's written in the New Testament, we're reminded you were bought at a price. And people read through that and it's like, yeah, we were bought at a price. Christ paid the price for it. No, stop and think about the actual freaking price. I mean, yeah, you didn't have to pay it, so who cares? But stop and think about the price. Read Abraham's story and start personalizing the actual price that was paid for you to give you the opportunity to carry out God's will. Jesus 3 times went up and prayed, if it be possible, Father, take this cup from me. I don't want to have to go through this. But ultimately, your will be done. This is a steep price here. And I don't like that so often it gets trivialized. People just, Jesus paid the price. Not even to mention getting into the way now they have marketed this, particularly in the MCC, as the price equals a get out of consequences for sin for free card. Now you've reached into heresy and essentially insulting and blaspheming God to a certain extent. Oh, this is just a get out of sin consequences for sin for free card. Now you if you go through and say you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you can do whatever the hell you want and you're guaranteed a spot in heaven. It doesn't matter, because see, God can't go against what he said, and he said you'd be saved. Anytime somebody tries to convince you with lawyer speak, anybody tries to do all this legalese technicality jargon on you, you do well to be skeptical, because they're leading you astray. So I said, when Jesus went up and prayed, I don't want to go through this, but your will be done. What was God's will here? Not to give you no freaking get out of consequences of sin for free card. It was that God's will be done. And what was God's will? going all the way back to why he created the first man, Adam, in the first place, so we may grow, understand him, spiritually mature, be ready for the next life. There you go. I was like, when people always are like, I just trying to figure out what God's will for my life. It's not a mystery. I know a lot of this stuff I've said before, but I'm just going to keep saying it. I'm sorry, because it's very important. How many people will sit there in how many churches this coming up Sunday and go to their pastor and say, Pastor, I just can't figure out. I'm just trying. I'm praying, trying to find out what God's will for my life is. And the pastor will tell him something like, you know, well, just keep praying and God will reveal what his answer the damn question, because it's not hard. I can give you the answer. I can give you the answer. It's not hard. You're supposed to go through life reflecting on yourself, constantly improving, seeking God, seeking to understand him, so that you may spiritually grow, spiritually mature, so that when you leave this brief realm that you are in now, and it is brief, you're birthed into the real life. You're ready to go. At least you're far enough along that you can pick up from there and keep maturing. There, that's God's will for your life. I know you want to be assigned some sort of super secret just for you because you're so special mission. Look, that's the mission. And it's important. It's important enough. God made the same journey that Abraham did and paid the price. There wasn't somebody else waiting to do the thing. The son actually got sacrificed. Let's personalize what God had to go through. Let's personalize it. Bought at a price. What are we doing with it? What are you doing with it? What are believers doing with it? Again, for what? That God's will be done, which is that we seek him. We're going through life. We're going through life reflecting on yourself, learning about yourself, why you do the things you do, learning about God, learning about his creation around you, putting that effort in so that you're spiritually maturing, spiritually growing. You keep screwing up. You get back up. You're working through your stuff. You're going through. You're putting in the work. That's it. What are we doing with it? Oh Lord, I can't set aside an hour a day to seek you and do some of this stuff and read the Bible, Lord. I got a lot of things to do. I can't. You're telling somebody marched their son up to Calvary and let him be executed for you. But I can't. I can't set aside an hour. I don't. Don't get me wrong. I know people got this. This is one of the satanic natures of this society, is it's structured in a manner to keep you from having that time. You know, I get it. I'm not trying to condemn anybody, because I understand you're working and you know, you're getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you go to work and you get home at 6 and eat supper. You barely have time to unwind for a second and then go back to sleep and go to it. I mean, but I got this weekend. I could set aside an hour. My family will be away, and I could set aside an hour to maybe pray and seek God and seek to understand him. I could do that then. But Lord, I got the game coming up, and I wanted to clean out the garage before the game gets started, because I got some friends coming up. We're going to watch the game. I can't set aside 1 hour this week, Lord. It's just too much of a sacrifice. You're telling that someone who marched their son up, their long waited for son, up to Calvary. You telling him, I got to watch a goddamn ball game this week. You see what I'm saying? What are we doing with it? You know, I mean, look, if you could only muster up, you know, 30 minutes a week, I mean, do something. Put the effort in. Good night. He. We're bought at a heavy price. And honestly, some of the excuses we give not to be carrying out God's will, when Jesus was facing what he faced and said, ultimately, may your will be done, Father. And we sitting there talking about, well, I got to go do this. I got to go wash the car or some shit. You're not taking that sacrifice seriously. You get all offended because God was so mean to make Abraham walk up there with his son Isaac thinking he's going to have to execute him. How could God be so mean? And when Jesus went through what he went through saying, your will be done, that your will be done, Father. And it's like, well, I got a lot going on. I just got to understand, man. I got these things. I get these things to take care of. I'm not a person who can, quote, do this whole like celebrating the cross and celebrating, Christ's crucifixion, because that's where our resurrection. I can't. I accept it with humility. It's a burdensome thing to really. I think maybe this is one of the reasons we don't do that, isn't it? Because if we don't want to look at it. If we look at it and think about think about the actual price that was paid. Let's read Abraham's story and then take that and say, wow, God had to actually go through that. And don't sit there and say, oh, it didn't count, though, because he knew he was going to be resurrected from the dead. He still had to go through it. When they took him down off that cross, he was still just as dead. So they said, well, 3 days later, though, he was going to be resurrected from the dead. So that you kind of can't count that. Well, Abraham made the walk because he figured, I don't want to put thoughts into his head, apply things here that is not written. But you had to have figured that as he was coping, heading up there, he was thinking, well, God went to the tree. I'm supposing he would be thinking something along the lines, perhaps, of, well, God provided Isaac to me. God's doing something here. I don't understand it. If I follow through here, it'll be revealed. I think we want to tend to avert our eyes from the actual. We talk about it. You go into a church and they talk about it, but they don't look at it. They don't really want to look at it. They'll talk about, yeah, the Lord sent his only begotten, Jesus came and he went to the cross for our sins. And God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. You see, he loves you so much. We won't focus on that love. We want to look away. I mean, it's fine, to say, God so loved us that he sent his only son. But we use that, I think, too often because we want to look away. We're going to look over here and talk about how much God loved us. We don't want to look over here and look at it. We don't want to personalize what was actually paid for us, because that infers then some responsibility on us, a grave responsibility. Again, that circles around to, okay, God did this for us. Now, what are you doing with it? What are you doing? We don't want to look at it, because then the lame ass excuses we give for why we don't have any time for God, and we keep him back there, not even on the back burner. He's in a cupboard somewhere. We bring him out and dust him out twice a year, once at Christmas and once at Easter, and we set him out on the table like the fine china and talk about how much we love the Lord, and then put him back up somewhere. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to think about, we don't have to start considering how lame our excuses of why we do that is. How they truly are, rather. How lame those excuses really are. I just, Lord, I got a lot going on. I got time to go fishing all day this weekend, but I don't have an hour to set aside to maybe pray in silence and listen and try to understand and to try to consider these things. And again, don't get it twisted. I know this society is structured in a way to intentionally keep you from fulfilling God's plan for your life. which is to learn, understand, know, reflect on yourself, grow. I know it is. I get that. Don't get it twisted. But find the time. I mean, even if it's 1 hour a week, I mean, find it where you can find it. Put the effort in. You know, God provides different things. He provides messages for you. Hopefully you get something out of this. This is why I share this particular segment of the show, because I get it. You're busy. You got things going on. You know, when I spend time seeking and praying the Lord and come across these things, and I'm like, this is something worthy of sharing. I share it with y'all, because I know a lot of you don't have that time. You don't have the ability to set it aside all the time. But when you can do it, and when you start to make those excuses, well, I could technically do it this Sunday, but I really wanted to sleep in. And stop and look at the price it was paid and ask, really? Really? You really want to give that excuse of why you can't be bothered when you were bought at that high of a price? When the opportunity for these to carry out God's will, and you're not carrying it out. Not carrying it out. Because you can't be bothered when you were bought at that price to give you that opportunity. You can't squander it. Again, Jesus bought you the opportunity to carry out God's will from the beginning, from the first man, why he created the first man, for you to spiritually grow, mature, and get ready for the kingdom to come. That's what he did not pay for. You can go sin all you want to and nothing's going to happen to you. You're free of consequence. That's not what it is. I know that's what the MCC preaches, to the point that they've become this ridiculous caricature that everybody makes fun of, including myself. You know, that's what they say. That's not. He brought you the opportunity to carry out God's will, to go through this life so that you spiritually mature and you're ready for God's kingdom. That puts a whole lot on you. You know, Jesus paid the price. God paid the price for you to have the opportunity. But then you've got to take the opportunity and do what you've got to do. You know, put in the effort. Set your heart on God every day as much as you can. You know, reset. Reflect on yourself. Man, I'm always stumbling over this. I'm always doing this. I don't understand this. I need to pray. I need to seek God out. I need to make sure I'm setting my heart on the Lord. And even though everything in this world is tugging at me and my own emotions are telling me I'm wasting my time, I'm going to keep after it and keep seeking God. I'm going to keep getting up every day. It's a monotonous. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. It's a day in. It just drags you down because it's a day in, day out. It is a grind, the spiritual walk of faith. Every day that you get up and put that effort in spite of all the distractions of the world, in spite of the mocking of fools, in spite of all of the flashing lights and they don't know, come over here, this is what everybody else is doing. Every day that you live your life carrying that out, you honor the price that was paid for you. You're not squandering it. You're putting in that effort. I know it gets tiresome. Everybody, look, don't even tell you, no, I don't ever get tired in this walk of faith, because that's a lie. Either that or they ain't doing much of a walk of faith, because it takes a lot of work every day. Try to seek God out. Some days it seems like it goes well, and then you realize and understand things and you're like, oh, you joyous in your heart and praising God. And then you might go weak and it's like you trying to pray and nothing much seems to be happening, you know, but you just keep at it. You know, you keep striving, and sometimes it seems like you're making progress. Sometimes it seems like you're not. It is a grind, but that is a sign of honoring the price that was paid. Look at it. Honor it. Don't avert your eyes. Read that story. Reread the story of Abraham making that walk and remember that God actually had to make the very same way. He didn't demand something of Abraham that he himself didn't do. personalize it for Abraham, that's fine. But personalize it also for the Lord. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of today's show, especially our Christian specific segment. That is the highlight of the show. I don't care what anybody says. I appreciate you joining me this week, and hopefully I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.